application for water rights in the Pedrosa Area Water and Sanitation District, and we are ready to hear from the appellant.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Drew Peternell. I represent the appellant in this case, Trout Unlimited. TU is a nonprofit fisheries conservation organization. We have roughly 10,000 members in the state of Colorado. The appellees in this case are the Pedrosa Area Water and Sanitation District and the San Juan Water Conservancy District. In 2004, the districts filed a joint application for conditional water rights for a water development known as the Dry Gulch Reservoir and Pumping Station. The 2004 application sought very large quantities of water to serve population growth in Archuleta County 100 years into the future. After a trial in May of 2006, the Division 7 Water Court awarded the water rights in the sizes the districts claimed. TU appealed that decision to this court. We argued that the districts had failed to satisfy the anti-speculation doctrine. And in October 2007, the court reversed the water court decision and remanded the case. The water court issued a decree on remand in September 2008. The remand decree awards districts a storage right of 19,000 acre feet, a refill right of 6,300 acre feet, the right to fill the reservoir at 100 cubic feet per second, and a separate direct flow right of 50 CFS. These rights are in addition to the San Juan District's existing 6,300 acre foot dry gulch reservoir conditional storage right. The districts have not demonstrated a non-speculative intent with respect to these quantities of water.
To supplement what you just said, isn't there an overall cap on the annual amount they can store in the reservoir?
There's a volumetric limitation in the remand decree on the total amount of water they can store in the reservoir. It's 25,000 acre feet. There's no volumetric limitation at all on the 50 CFS direct flow right. Okay. In your 2007 opinion in this case, you determined that the public entity has the burden of demonstrating three elements of the anti-speculation doctrine. First, what is a reasonable water supply planning period? Second, what are the substantiated population projections based on a normal rate of growth for that period? And third, what amount of water is reasonably necessary to serve the reasonably anticipated needs through the planning period? The question here is whether the water court applied that standard, and further, whether the applicant satisfied that standard. This court refused de novo the question of whether the water court applied the correct standard. Whether the district satisfied that standard presents mixed questions of law and fact, also subject to de novo review. This appeal is not primarily a challenge to the water court's factual findings, as the applicants would have you believe. To the contrary, the water court made only two or three findings of fact that TU would challenge. Those findings of fact are relevant to only two or three discrete issues. The balance of the water court's findings of fact need not be disturbed for this court to determine that the applicants fail to satisfy the standard. As I address the issues, I will identify any relevant findings of fact that we would challenge. The first element of the standard requires an applicant to demonstrate the reasonable planning horizon for the water rights claims. In the Pedrosa opinion, this court ruled that determining the reasonable water rights planning horizon is a fact-specific determination. The water court misinterpreted this court's opinion. It found that establishing 50 years, the water court found that this court established 50 years as a reasonable planning horizon as a matter of law. Based on that misinterpretation of this court's opinion, the water court adopted a 50-year horizon through the year 2055.
I see that exactly what you're talking about in terms of what the judge said. Excuse me. I guess it's in paragraph 14 of his order. Right. But could you run through the rationale? I was having a lot. My lack of clarity or lack of really ability to focus on what was a finding of fact and what was a conclusion of law, and really how we're to deal with it. And the 50-year thing, the whole idea of the 50-year thing is the thing that, at least as far as I'm concerned, I had a serious question about. And it seemed to me our opinion said that the Bijou case was 50 years. that almost, it implied almost that you could use for something like this, a 50-year plan. But in any event, I just wondered if you could go through the paragraphs to, or some summary to indicate what you really think is not a factual finding, but in fact is a conclusion of law that we have.
Well,
have the authority actually to reverse. It's just confusing to me. I mean, I have trouble.
I agree with you. I think that a number of the findings that are characterized as being factual findings may in fact be legal conclusions. You've got paragraphs, starting with paragraph basically 13 of the remand decree, running all the way through paragraph 36. Those are characterized as factual findings, and I've read some of those to be legal conclusions.
Well, I think it would be helpful if you could just point out a couple. I think you pointed one statement about the 50-year planning horizon in paragraph 14, which you think is not a finding of fact, but is something that we have jurisdiction as at least to review as a matter of law.
Sure. I guess to try to answer your question, I would say that there are a discrete number of factual findings, which I will identify as I go through the outline, which TU would challenge and which we believe need to be rejected. And those discrete number of factual findings are not supported in the evidence. They're wholly unsupported in the evidence. The other point I would make on this topic is that the applicant's counsel prepared all these factual findings. The water court adopted them verbatim. And under your uptime case, this court would give those factual findings less deference than it would otherwise. I'm not sure that I'd have the time with 23 minutes left to go through all, 20 of these factual findings.
I didn't mean it for that. I just wanted you to give me two or three points about questions of law dealing with the 50-year horizon that we can just simply review.
Sure. There are a number of questions of pure questions of law that this court has discretion or the authority to flatly reject. For example, the court, in your 2007 opinion, you instructed the water court to account for land use in determining the district's future per capita water use, per capita water demand. The water court flatly failed to do that. It doesn't say in the findings of fact that it rejected or ignored land use issues, but there's nothing in the findings of fact that would say that it looked at land use. And in fact, the per capita demand projections, which were put forth by the district's water engineer, he admitted that he didn't account for land use. So that's one example of a purely legal issue that this court has the authority to reject outright. The finding on the 50 years is another one. A third would be in the 2007 opinion, this court instructed the water court to determine the applicant's reasonable requirements above their existing supplies. The water court failed to apply that piece of the requirement, just flatly failed to apply that part of the standard. A fourth would be on the bypass flow requirements. The evidence showed that the districts determined the size of their water rights claims based on this thought that there might be a bypass flow requirement imposed by the U.S. Forest Service in a permit for the project. The water court looked at the evidence. It found that the district's flow rate claims were based on an assumption that bypass flows might be imposed. And then it went ahead and awarded the exact flow rates that the applicants requested. So that in that respect, the decision was in direct conflict, legal conflict, with this court's 2007 opinion. So if I could go back and say a few more words about the planning horizon. It's our assertion that the water court simply failed to understand the standard. The evidence in this case would not support a planning horizon of 50 years. It would support a planning horizon of 30 to 40 years. There are numerous water resources planning studies in the record, all based on a planning horizon of shorter than 40 years. The most important was the 2003 study by the applicant's water engineer that was before the districts as they were forming their intent to appropriate. That study from 2003 was based on a 37-year horizon through the year 2040. And as this court held in the 2007 opinion, that study would support a planning horizon of 2040. The engineer prepared another report in 2003 that looked at demands over 22 years until the year 2025. And in that report, the engineer wrote that building Dry Gulch Reservoir to 4,000 acre feet would, quote, provide far more water than is needed. And for comparison purposes, 4,000 acre feet is one-sixth, less than one-sixth of the 25,000 acre feet that would be allowed under the remand decree. A third study, the San Juan District found in this third study that a 35-year horizon was, quote, the most reasonable and is long enough to assure that the reservoir would not be undersized. So the 50-year horizon that the Water Court adopted is longer than the district's own planning exercises demonstrate to be reasonable. There are at least three other studies in the record based on a planning horizon of shorter than 30 years.
Now, based on my recall, what you say is accurate, but it seemed to me that the Water Court basically factored in the almost a 20-year horizon on the front end for the permitting process and then sort of tacked on this period of actual water use. Now, do you see it that way? And why wouldn't that be reasonable to do that if, in fact, it's going to take so long to develop the structure before you first put water into it?
That was my next point, in fact. In the Bijou case, this court endorsed a 50-year horizon because development of the project in that case would have taken 30 to 40 years. And if you use that as a guide, the 20 years necessary to build the Dry Gulch project wouldn't justify a 50-year horizon. It would justify a horizon of around 30 to 40 years.
But wouldn't the total then amount to, you know, in the ballpark of 50 years? That's what I was trying to understand what the Water Court ended up with.
Sure. Again, to be clear, in the Bijou case, from the time the application was filed until the time the project was going to be completed, it was expected to be 30 to 40 years. The entire planning horizon that the court used in that case was 50 years, so 30 or 40 plus another 15. In this case, we've got a 20-year horizon to develop the project, and then the court added 30 on top of that for the water rights claim. So if you use the Bijou case as sort of a benchmark, it seems to me that the horizon here should be roughly 35 years. Let me turn to the second prong of the anti-speculation test. Under that prong, an applicant is required to demonstrate substantiated population projections based on a normal rate of growth for the planning period. The Water Court here did not make a finding on the district's population through the planning period, and in that respect, the court failed to apply the standard as this court articulated it. Though the Water Court did not make findings on the applicant's population, it did find that the applicants substantiated their method of projecting water demand. And to the extent that that finding is read as a finding that the applicants substantiated their population, it is a finding that we would ask this court to reject. To determine future water demand, the district's water engineer multiplied his projection of population by his projection of per capita water demand. That was a perfectly reasonable calculation, a perfectly reasonable way to calculate demand. The problem was the water engineer's method of projecting population was flawed, and his population projections were wholly unsubstantiated. Again, the Bijou case provides a good benchmark for what it takes to substantiate population projections. There, the applicants presented extensive evidence to substantiate their growth projections. That evidence included testimony from planning experts, planning studies, evidence of planned future economic development. This court, in its review on appeal of that case, wrote that the applicants' projections were, quote, based on studies conducted by experts in the field and appearing to have considerable basis in fact and theory. The district's evidence here falls far short. The districts did not present testimony from a planner or a demography expert. Instead, they relied exclusively on population projections prepared by their water engineer. The water engineer testified at trial. He was an expert in water engineering. He was not offered as an expert in planning or population projections.
Let me ask you this, though. That may be true, but it appears that in the reality checks that the court did insert, it's going to use the six-year diligence period to test whether those engineers' projections are accurately proving out or not. So what do you say to the fact that we now have a decree, which we didn't have before, that in addition to not allowing reuse, substantially limits the overall storage that can be obtained, and then has these reality checks to look at population projection and arguably land use mix and those kind of things?
Sure. You know, the reality checks are not a substitute for satisfying the three prongs of the anti-speculation test. This court has never suggested that. Rather, this court made clear in both the Bijou case and your first opinion on this case that reality checks may be imposed. They're an additional layer of protection that may be imposed if the applicant first satisfies the anti-speculation standard, which the applicants did not do here. It would be our assertion that it would be unfairly burdensome on parties like TU who are seeking to protect Colorado's interests in avoiding speculation. It would be unfairly burdensome on us if an applicant could remedy its failure to satisfy the anti-speculation standard by simply imposing or including a reality check in its remand decree. All that does is put the anti-speculation scrutiny off to a later date and require my client to engage in continuing litigation. It means we've got to go back to court in 6 years and engage in continuing litigation, which is costly and time-consuming. I'd also suggest that putting off the anti-speculation scrutiny to a later date will result in the tying up of water that might not be needed, and that's going to undercut Colorado's policy of maximum utilization. If I can return back to the second prong, the district's evidence was far less than what the applicants in the Bijou case presented. And in making his population projections, the district's engineer ignored important pieces of evidence that could have influenced his projections of population. He ignored demographic studies. He ignored all land use issues. He ignored population projections from the state demographer. He also ignored the 2005 Pagosa Springs Economic Development Plan and the population projections that were included in that document. Compared to the population projections in the development plan and from the state demographer, the district's population projections were extremely high. Their water engineer admitted that he intended for his projections to be high. The methodology that the engineer used to project population was simply to assume that past growth rates would be the future growth rate. So, to be specific, the district's experienced 7% annual growth in water usage from 1995 to 2000. The water engineer assumed, therefore, that the district would experience 7% growth per year in both population and water use from 2000 until 2010. The engineer used past population growth rates from before 1995 as his longer-term population growth beyond 2010. There was nothing at all in the record to substantiate the district's populations, their projections, or the methodology their engineer used to develop them. Rather, the evidence demonstrated that real demographic experts, real planners, use forecasting methodologies that account for numerous factors, things like labor supply, labor demand, development activity, economic forecasts, real estate, land use conditions. Simply assuming that past growth will repeat is not a substantiated way to project population. Now, let me say a word about equivalent units. An EU is a measure of water usage. It's equivalent to the amount of water used in the average single-family home in the district's service area. The districts measured their water usage in terms of EU, and that's perfectly fine. The problem was that their engineer assumed that past EU growth, past water use growth, would be the future population growth. Assuming that past growth rates, whether it's in terms of EU or some other measure of water usage or population, assuming that the past growth rate is going to be the future rate of population growth is not a substantiated way to project population. In addition to being unsubstantiated, the district's population projections were also not based on a normal rate of growth. The district's engineer characterized the period of 1995 to 2000 as, quote, an extremely high growth rate period. He then used the 7% EU growth from that period as his projected growth for 2000 to 2010. An extremely high growth rate period is not a normal rate of growth, and the district's population projections fail in that respect as well. We turn to the third prong. The third prong requires an applicant to demonstrate the amount of water that is reasonably necessary to serve its reasonably anticipated requirements for the planning period. And there are four ways in which the water court misapplied this prong of the standard. First, and most fundamentally, the water court did not require the applicants to demonstrate any relationship at all between the district's proposed or projected 2025 or 2055 water demands. No relationship between the 2055 water demands and the amount of water the court decreed. The district's water engineer projected demand in 2055 to be approximately 14,000 acre feet. The water court decreed water rights that could yield 68,000 acre feet of water per year. Now, the water court did adopt the district's proposed finding that the claimed amounts of water are reasonably necessary to serve projected population. This is a finding, or perhaps it's a legal conclusion, that we would ask this court to reject. It's wholly unsupported in the evidence. The court offered no explanation at all for why water rights capable of producing 68,000 acre feet would be necessary to serve demands of 14,000 acre feet. It's really not, it's not possible to know by looking at the remand decree how the water court selected water rights and the sizes it did. The applicants cannot point to a single shred of evidence in the record that suggests a need for 68,000 acre feet of water per year.
Where does that, help us again, where does that 68,000 acre foot calculation you just made came from? Because the storage is capped.
Sure, the storage.
So what allows them to actually divert 68,000
acre feet? Sure, you've got 19,000 acre feet on a first fill. You've got a second fill of 6,300 acre feet. I'm adding the 6,300 acre foot reservoir water right that the districts already have. They've already got a conditional water right from the 80s for 6,300 acre feet for the Dry Gulch Reservoir. And then the 50 CFS at 724 acre feet per year, that adds up to about 36,000 acre feet. So altogether, I get the 68,000 acre feet per year under the Dry Gulch water rights, including the existing one and the now the new remand decree.
That's not a diversion into storage. That's a separate direct diversion.
The 50 CFS is a direct flow diversion that's separate from the 100 CFS fill rate they have.
And how do they propose to use that?
That question might be better posed to their counsel. The applicants will argue that their intent to prepare for drought conditions worse than the most severe on record somehow justify their appropriations. But under PAGOSA, we need to remember an applicant must demonstrate that the claimed amounts are reasonably necessary to serve the reasonably anticipated requirements. The districts did not demonstrate that drought more severe than the most severe on record should be reasonably anticipated. There's no evidence to that effect. And they certainly didn't demonstrate that dealing with those hypothetical future conditions to require, reasonably require water rights in the sizes the water court decreed. The districts also argue that they need a safety supply in the amount of 1 year's demand. So they want to basically double their demand from 14,000 acre feet, which is what their engineer projected in 2055, to 28,000 acre feet. Even if it were acceptable for the districts to double their demands from 14,000 acre feet per year to 28,000 acre feet per year, according to the safety supply margin or the safety supply policy, 28,000 acre feet is still 40,000 acre feet less than the water court decreed. The districts seem to be aware that they haven't met their burden, and therefore they argue that they may not always fully exercise their water rights. That's not important. What is important is that the remand decree on its face allows the districts to divert 68,000 acre feet per year of water from the San Juan River, even though the applicants didn't demonstrate a reasonable need for that amount of water. The problem, in other words, is that while there's a volumetric limitation on the storage right, there's not a volumetric limitation on the direct flow water right. These water rights are not limited in volume to the applicant's reasonable needs. The state of Colorado has an interest in avoiding water speculation, has an interest in preserving unappropriated water for future users, and that interest needs to be protected by binding limitations and decrees, not by a non-binding suggestion of an applicant that its water right may not be fully exercised in some years. In selecting the amounts of water to decree, and this is the second error that the water court made under the third prong, the water court focused on conjectural changes in water availability. The evidence at trial, as I said before, suggested that the districts based their water rights claims on the possibility that other parties might appropriate water rights in the future, or that the United States Forest Service might impose a bypass flow condition. And TU challenged that in the first appeal, and in your opinion, you wrote that the district's concern about future water rights or federal permit conditions, quote, do not fit the applicable requirement to address water availability based on conditions as they exist by reason of the exercise of prior appropriated rights. On remand, the water court ignored that ruling. The water court rightly found that the districts based their flow rate claims on a assumption about federal bypass flows. The court then proceeded to award the flow rates in the exact amount the districts claimed on remand. So the water court's decision is in direct conflict with this court's holding. In conclusion, and I think I've already mentioned the other two errors the court made under the third prong. One was the per capita water use. The court didn't account for land use and conservation as this court instructed it to. And fourthly, the water court didn't determine the size of the applicant's reasonable needs beyond their current supply. The court made no findings on the applicant's current supply of water. So in conclusion, because the water courts did not apply the standard and the applicants didn't satisfy the standard, TE would respectfully request that this court reverse the water court decision. Thank you. I'd like to reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal.
Yeah, man.
Hello, good morning. My name is Evan Ela. I represent the Pagosa Area Water and Sanitation District and the San Juan Water Conservancy District, both applicants or co-applicants in this case. Mr. Peternell gave you the procedural history up until the last appeal, but since that appeal, I think it's important to fill in some of the blanks. And let's start with what this court told the water court to do. This water court was told by this court that it had not made sufficient findings of fact first time. And then this court gave the water court discretion on whether to take evidence or not and whether to take additional argument or not. This is found in Pagosa 1 at page 36. The water court was specifically instructed to, one, examine the evidence, two, accompany its judgment with sufficient findings of fact based on the evidence, three, fashion appropriate decree provisions, and four, make factual findings on canon will. This court did not direct the water court to make findings concerning the level of potential development on the land within the county and some of these other factors that were mentioned in the opinion, but were not required of the water court. The water court issued a remand decree only after briefing and argument by the parties.
Mr. Are you suggesting that our opinion relieved the water court of the responsibility of making findings and conclusions of law with respect to some aspects of what was necessary by not specifically directing that?
Not a bit, Your Honor. But what you did give are general instructions, as I just recited them, and left it in the discretion of the water court to determine what was necessary in order to determine whether a conditional water right could be granted in this case.
So what's the effect of that? I mean, if you think we left it in the trial court's in the water court's discretion, does that mean that's reviewable on a different standard at this point for some reason?
Certainly not. He has to review on the basis of the existing case law.
So I don't understand what the effect is of the argument that you just made, indicating that we didn't give the water court direction or specific directions to make findings and conclusions with respect to some of the points that were just argued to us.
Well, I did not read in the Pagosa 1 opinion that the factors mentioned by Mr. Peternell to be essential elements of proving a conditional water right. I read it to be factors that can be taken into consideration. It doesn't mean that they would be relevant in all cases. And I didn't read them to absolutely be relevant even in this case necessarily, but I read your opinion to say that it was left in the discretion of the water court to determine what factors were relevant.
Well, excuse me, the portion of the opinion I think Justice Martinez is referring to refers that the ultimate factual legal issue is the involves such factors as implementation of reasonable water conservation measures for the planning period, reasonably expected land use mixes, reasonably attainable per capita usage projections for indoor and outdoor use based on the land use mixes, and the amount of consumptive use reasonably necessary for use through the conditional appropriation. Why isn't that sufficient guidance?
I believe that is sufficient guidance, but then this court also gave the water court discretion on whether or not to consider each of those factors. That's my interpretation.
And so where is the court's finding that it doesn't need to consider those factors or has considered those factors? And doesn't the remand say taking additional evidence appear on a common sense reading to involve those kinds of issues?
I will leave that up to the water court's interpretation, I guess, Your Honor.
Well, how did the water court interpret that language I just read to you?
The water court asked the parties to brief him after this Pagosa 1 opinion was issued, which we did. And when we briefed, I submitted a proposed ruling that contained sufficient findings of facts to grant the conditional water right. And the Water Court apparently was persuaded by that and took that decree, modified it, and entered it as the final decree. He apparently believed that there was sufficient evidence in the record to justify issuing the conditional right. And in fact, the decree that we submitted during that briefing process asked for a 70-year planning horizon. It asked for reduced storage claims based on this Pagosa 1 opinion. It asked for an annual limit on the fill and the refill of the storage. It deleted a claim for reuse. It added reality checks. And it put in more detailed findings of fact based on the evidence from trial. The Water Court then modified that proposed ruling by reducing the planning horizon from 70 to 50 years, reduced the storage amount from 23,000 to 19,000 acre feet, and reduced the direct diversion from 80 CFS to 50 CFS. He also added a specific reference to reality checks in every paragraph where a decreed amount was decreed, a rate of flow or a diversion amount. So it is clear that he intended that the reality checks would play a part in the ongoing perfection and the life of this of these water rights. From the beginning, I mean, the Water Court process has been successful overall, as we showed in our brief. We have a table showing how the application began with a number approaching 200 CFS. Diversion rate was in the remand decree is now only 100 CFS. Refill volume was reduced from 35,000 to 25,000. Initial fill from 29,000 to 19. The direct flow rate from 80 to 50 CFS. The volumetric storage limit from 64,000 down to 25,000. The combined diversion limit from 280 CFS to 150 CFS. Priority date from March 14th, 2000 to December 20th, 2004. The reuse to extinction claim was deleted. The reality checks provisions were added, and the planning period was changed from 95 years to 50 years. So there have been significant reductions in this decree since the application first was submitted to the court. We believe the relevant standard in this case is deference to the Water Court's findings. CRPC's Rule 52 says findings of fact will not be set aside unless clearly erroneous, and with due regard given to the trial judge to judge the credibility of the witnesses. The Bijou case said the trial court was entitled to deference on factual issues, and factual determinations should not be disturbed unless evidence is wholly insufficient to support them. Trout Unlimited cites the Marriage of West case. We believe it's inapplicable. That was a verbatim order issued by the court without change. Here, the reband decree was not verbatim. It was changed significantly. And finally, Marriage of West relied on the Uptime case, and the Uptime case has several important quotations. One being, it is only when the findings themselves are inadequate and do not indicate the basis for the trial court's decision, the judgment will be reversed. And if after careful study, the trial judge concludes that the findings prepared by a party correctly state the law and the facts, there's no good reason why he may not adopt them as his own, which is what we believe the trial court did here.
Counsel, go ahead. No, go ahead.
No.
Really?
Please.
Okay, I'll, with your permission, can I return you back to the 50 years, and can you help me understand how the Water Court arrived at the 50 years? I mean, obviously went from 95 to 50, but I think the ruling is somewhat unclear as to how the 50 years was arrived on, or at least maybe I'm not doing the math correctly, but can you help me understand how the 50 years is correct in this case?
Well, I can only go by what the trial court has done. Like I said, when we submitted a remand opinion, or a remand decree, we asked for 70-year planning period, thinking that it was justified based on the circumstances. The court, in modifying our submitted ruling, changed it to 50-year planning period, and he recited, changed the language in paragraph 17 of the remand decree. And that's all I know. We did not have a hearing. He did not verbally give us any other...
Well, I guess I'm asking you to interpret his... It's a lengthy written order, so I guess I'm asking you to interpret that, and I guess to ask more specifically, is Justice Hobbs correct that there was a kind of a 20-year building period and a 30-year period, or, I mean, he's got a 35-year period, so maybe there's a 15-year build-up period. I'm wondering if you can interpret the order for me or how you read it.
Okay, I understand. Thank you. There is at least a 20-year planning, design, et cetera, horizon, permitting horizon, before you can even build a reservoir. A reservoir is a much more intensive project than, say, a pipeline or a pump station from the river. I believe that you're right. If you have a 20-year planning horizon to get the reservoir constructed, you would hope it has a useful life of 30 to 40 years. And if you added those two things together, a planning horizon of 50 years is not unreasonable. It seems to fit just fine. If you were to adopt the Trout Unlimited's approach to the world, a water supply agency would have to, build incrementally every 2 or 3 years as their demand increased, which is just not reasonable if you're building large projects. That might make sense if you're building a house and then you add a room and then you add another room as the family grows. But it is not that simple in a water resource project. You have a huge lead time, a lot of considerations and financing to build a big project. And it has to be done in large stair-step increments. It can't be just done 2 years prior to when you need the water.
Thank you.
That's obviously accurate, what you're saying. Doesn't that mean it's more important to take a look at the population projections and have them be as accurate as possible? So they can determine the water demand and so forth?
I agree with you. They should be as accurate as possible, and I don't believe they can be any more accurate than what is based on the local data. Every water system in Colorado is different. Growth data in Denver or Thornton or Pueblo is very different than in Pagosa Springs or Vail or Steamboat Springs. You have to look at that local recent history and work from that in order to figure out what the correct population projection is. But even then, it's a projection. It's not going to be exactly accurate in any case. And in this case, recognizing that, the reality checks are there so that when you get to these various stages of the project development, when the permit is known, when there's a bypass known, when there's a population data, at least 10 or 15 years of population data, a more accurate prediction can be made, and the size of the reservoir can
be. Then you've tied up the water for all that period, right?
You have not tied up the water. This is conditional water right. There are numerous conditional water rights on the books that have never been perfected or have been partially perfected. They do not preclude anyone from appropriating water from the stream. It is the process of perfection. TU puts this thing on its head, as though the conditional water right is the end-all be-all. It is the perfection of the water right that locks in the right to use and precludes it from someone else's use.
As to your argument that, of course, population projections are ultimately just that, projections, and the accuracy of that is only determined over time, and of course there's lots of unforeseen factors that can intervene. However, can you respond more directly? I mean, you basically have just said, however, that taking the most recent period of growth and projecting it is a reasonable way of doing that. But it seems to me that the argument is that you at least have to take some look at whether the most recent period of growth, is one that can be reasonably anticipated. And I wonder if you could respond to that.
Well, we believe that that our expert did take a reasonable approach. There's no question that between 1995 and 2000, there was a high rate of growth, 7%. And at the year 2000, or even when he did his report in 2003, and when we filed this case in 2004, and he projected out even farther than his report, things were still growing very fast. And in fact, He talked to the state demographer's office, and they had predicted, they had under-predicted the population of Archuleta County by 40%, using the fancy demographic techniques that they have at their disposal. They had under-predicted the population by 40% in a short time horizon from 95 to about 2004. Mr. Harris said, well, you know, obviously this high growth rate is not going to continue forever. But he did extend it a few more years out till about 2010. And then he used the long-term census growth rate of 2% in Archuleta County dating back since the 1940s. And that was his long-term projection that he used out for the next 30 or 40, well, originally 80 years, but has truncated out to 30 years. So there is a long-term trend built into those numbers. And there's also the reality of the fast growth that was occurring right about the time that this project was at, or these water rights were applied for. So, and then I believe once you're there, that's a projection. It's based on local data. It's based on the kind of water use within the population that's there. It's a lot of second homes. There's a lot of transient. It's a lot of tourism. It's just a different animal than, you know, your typical suburb. So you have to take all that into account. You make your projection. And then you have a reality check on the other end that says, well, let's look at it. In 15 years, we'll be able to look back and say, well, yeah, it didn't pan out, or it did pan out. And adjustments will be made. And contrary to Mr. Peternell, I believe the reality checks put the burden on the court to look at that every time, every 6 years. They have to look at that, look at the reality checks, force the applicant to make that case. It has nothing to do whether an objector gets in the case or not. The water right, water rights of the state, the water resources of the state are being protected by the water court.
Could I ask you a little more of a legal question?
Sure.
Because I'm kind of intrigued with your proposal of the 70 years, then the judge reducing it down to 50 with no more express explanation than he gave. How do you understand our reference in the Pagosa opinion to the 50-year projected period that was approved in Bijou? What do you think we were saying there about a presumption or the validity of a planning range 50 years, greater than 50 years? What did that mean?
Well, as you all know, any words that you put on paper have great import. I mean, and everyone will interpret them differently. I don't think that a 50-year horizon is appropriate in every case. I think there are cases when it should be much greater than 50 years, frankly. And I thought so in this case, and still do. But, and I saw in the dissenting opinions that were written, you know, some members of the court were concerned that, in fact, a de facto 50-year standard had been established just by it being written into the opinion.
Now, I'm sorry, would you say that again? Did you say the court seemed to indicate that that's what it felt?
Well, it seemed to me members of the court thought that that had occurred. And I don't believe that occurred. I think every case has to be on its merits and that you have to prove a period of time. But I also believe that the water judge, he has a duty to issue a decree based on an integration of all of the evidence he heard, what he knows, what he knows about this case, and the credibility of the witnesses and the sources of data. And I don't believe there is a legal standard that says that he has to write in his decree, the reason I said 50 years is because of these six reasons. I believe he just has to say, I believe it's appropriate in this case.
Maybe I could phrase that just slightly differently. And I think maybe this is what your, what opposing counsel was getting at in his characterization of the order. In the absence of any more express reasoning, is there a suggestion here that the district court felt that what we said in Pagosa was 50 years is okay for municipal planning without regard to further and to further justification, and only to exceed that 50-year presumption would further justification have to be provided? And if that's true, do you think that that is in fact the law, and he would be justified in doing that?
I think you're correct that a breakpoint was established, because the opinion did say that beyond 50 years needs to have greater scrutiny. And it does seem to imply that 50 years or less could be would take less scrutiny. But I think in either case, you have to prove what a reasonable planning horizon is going to be. So I...
And by the way, you apparently, by proposing more, felt that you all had provided justification for a greater period than that presumptive 50 years.
We thought our evidence provided justification for greater than 50, and that's what we asked for.
Before I interrupted the court...
I'm sorry?
Before I interrupted the court, I was going to focus you on the 50 CFS direct flow diversion, and I want to quote to you this provision or this language in the opinion. The decree also contains an unexplained direct flow diversion rate of 80 CFS. You recall that part of the opinion. Mm-hmm. Now, do we have an unexplained 50 CFS direct diversion now? What does it relate to? How is the water going to be used, and why is this in this decree?
Okay. This is the Dry Gulch project. It has two components. It has a storage, and it has a pumping station on the shore of, or on the bank of San Juan River. The district's hope to get the pumping station built by 2015, maybe even sooner, maybe in 2012, depending. They need to have a direct flow water right so they can divert water from the river and use it directly into their distribution system. It goes right to the toilets and showers and so forth. That's the direct flow component of this thing. The other water right is the storage right and a fill right, because you have to pump every drop from the river into the reservoir. So you have both components. Now, let's say once the project is completely built, on a given day, you may have a demand in your water system of 10 CFS, direct demand. You can pump that from the river on that day, direct demand, direct flow, right to the system. But let's say it's August, and the river and the senior rights and whatever only give you a legal yield from the river of 2 CFS or zero or something. Well, then you have to use your storage in the reservoir to provide that flow and that water to your system. So it's both working hand in hand, direct flow and storage.
Well, I don't... what kind of population does 50 CFS serve?
Well, as I said, 50 CFS could serve a huge population. And Mr. Harris determined that at the... out in the future, like in 50, 60 years, he would have a daily demand of 25 CFS. I mean, that's to feed the system every day, 25 CFS. Well, you have to make that up with some kind of a blend of water rights, what you can get from your direct flow and what you have to take from storage. And as I also have argued in the brief, we have this federal permit to worry about. Federal permit is not a senior water right. It's not a senior conditional water, right? It's yet a whole different animal. And water supply agencies have to plan for this. And I believe that if you have a 50 CFS direct flow water right, in this case, and on a given day, you have to make a bypass of 30 CFS on top of what already is being claimed by the CWCB in-stream flow right, you would exercise 30 CFS of that direct flow water right to make the bypass, because that's the only way that makes the diversion of your 10 CFS possible. You have to meet that permit requirement in order to take your water. And so you would be exercising on that day 30 to the bypass, 10 to yourself, a total of 40 CFS. And it is that contingency that is built into these numbers. Mr. Harris testified to that. The water court heard that, and the water court agreed with that. Now, I can understand that this court may want to think long and hard on what a federal bypass is, a permit requirement. You know, is it an incident of use, or is it an actual beneficial use, or is it something else? I'm not sure. But I believe that it should be a beneficial use. And I believe in the opinion you recently issued, the Vance opinion, you have the same kind of indication. Beneficial uses evolve over time, and this is one that is becoming a part of the actual landscape. Can't be avoided. I mean, federal permitting is federal permitting. I don't believe there's a way
to get bypass out. Though sits out as a very theoretical imposition. Mm-hmm. I mean, I understand the Forest Service in recent years has said it's probably going to work with the water users and the state not to require bypass flows. If other kinds of mitigation procedures and environment shows that it's not necessary. And we did express some concern about tying up a lot of water based on that kind of supposition that might happen. And it seems to me that there's no other facts, no Forest Service testimony, nothing site-specific about how this bypass would work or why it would be needed. It's basically thrown in there on a speculative supposition that it might be needed in some amount. I mean, would you respond to that, please?
I'll be glad to. I don't believe it's speculative. I think it's highly probable. And I think we proved that it's highly probable because in a prior permit that we obtained for our pipeline project, we are required to do a 3CFS bypass. We currently have a 3CFS bypass.
What does that mean? You just can't take water, in amounts that would interrupt that kind of flow through, right? Isn't that what a bypass is?
Well, yeah. For example, where we are on the San Juan River, the CWCB has an in-stream flow right for 50 CFS. So obviously we can't take the flow below 50 CFS because there's a senior water right. But if the federal permit says, oh, and by the way, we want you to put additional 30 on top of that so that there's a flow of 80 in the stream before you can divert, what can we do about that? We can either only divert at times when there's 80 or more, but that subjects us to this insidious removal of water over time by other appropriators who aren't subject to a federal bypass because their project may not be on federal land. And we then slowly lose the ability to divert as that water is eaten up by other appropriators and we are still forced to maintain this 30 CFS bypass. And so we are trying to account for that in these numbers. But even more importantly, that reality check provision is keyed specifically to those permit conditions. And if we get 15 years out, we get our permit, and what you believe is right, the U.S. Forest Service has agreed that they're not going to put bypass flows on anymore, the court has every reason to drop this number. Has every reason to drop this number down. I don't see how that creates bad public policy. It creates abilities for these water supply agencies to plan for the contingencies of the future. And at the very least, the bypass flow is a loss. It's like if you build a reservoir, you know you're going to lose X amount to evaporation. You know you're going to lose a little bit to seepage. And you know that you're going to have to do something to pay the federal government off in order to have the right to even have the reservoir there in the first place. Those are all incidents of being able to use your water rights. And I really believe the Arapaho case is not on point to argue that, as TU has. In the Arapaho case, the water court ordered the engineers to model as though all the conditional water rights were fully diverting. And I agree, that's not a real condition. As we were talking about earlier, having conditional water rights on the stream does not mean all that water will get diverted. It doesn't. Only what gets perfected is what matters, and that was the basis of the Arapaho case. The federal permit is a different animal. It's not a senior water right, and like I said, it's taken care of because it may not occur, in which case it won't have to be accounted for in these appropriations. I guess in summary, I'd like to submit that the districts have met the burdens of proof. The Supreme Court articulated what the water court should do, and that was to use its discretion to hear or to actually examine the evidence, hear argument or more evidence if it thought necessary, and issue findings of fact based on that. And that is exactly what the water court did. He took argument and then issued a ruling. I believe that the ruling substantiates with the facts, the findings, and the conditional water rights, and that there is evidence to support the decree as it's written.
Did neither party offer additional evidence?
We did not. We in our briefing, said that there was sufficient evidence. I don't recall whether TU, I guess he can address that in his rebuttal, but I know that in the status conference, both parties stated to the judge that additional evidence was not necessary. Let me address one other point that Mr. Peter Nell mentioned, and that is the the yield from these conditional water rights. He assumes that we can divert at 40 CFS or 50 CFS for 365 days a year at that full rate. There's no water right in this state that does that. There's seasonal variability in the streams, and there's legal variability on the stream. And to assume that as the yield of these water rights is just simply without knowledge of the hydrology of the state. Thank you very much.
Let me address a couple of points quickly, if I could. On the last point that the applicants made about the diversion rates and whether they would be able to divert the entire 50 CFS all the time, the applicants proved at trial, and TU didn't challenge, that water is available for these appropriations. They made a big point of that, and for them to now argue that, well, we might not appropriate, we might not use all that water that we've proven to be available, that's not a fair argument. And again, there are no volumetric limitations in the decree. It would restrict their use. The decree allows them to divert the entire 50 CFS all the time, and that's a lot of water. On the per capita demand as it relates to conservation, on page 317 of this court's opinion, you ruled that pertinent to the applicant's future water demands would be factors such as implementation of reasonable water conservation measures for the planning period. During the drought of 2002, when the districts implemented dry year conservation, demand dropped by 30 to 40% in the district service area. Their engineer conceded at trial that if they implemented similar dry year conservation measures in the future, demand would drop by a similar measure during a drought. Nevertheless, the engineer's demand projections didn't account for those dry year conservation measures. So by adopting the district's per capita demand projections, the water court failed to account for reasonable water conservation measures that history has already shown to be effective in reducing demand during dry years. The applicants mentioned that the Colorado State Demography Office erred in 1994 in projecting demand or projecting population through 2004. That was a hearsay statement that was admitted to the record. It's entitled to little weight. Moreover, an alleged error by the state demographer in 1994 in projecting population through 2004 doesn't create a license for the applicants to ignore sound population projection and to make up their own lay projections of population. And even if it were true that the state demographer erred in 1994, that does nothing to substantiate the district's projections that they put forth here. On the bypass question, Justice Hobbs is correct that the Forest Service and the state of Colorado have a memorandum of agreement that requires the Forest Service to attempt to minimize the use of bypass flows. It's also true that the diversion point for this structure, the diversion point that they want to take the water out for both the direct flow water right and the reservoir, doesn't lie on Forest Service land. So the Forest Service really has no interest in requiring a bypass below the diversion point. There was no testimony in the record that said that there's likely to be a bypass. In this case, all the testimony was is that the applicants had been subjected to a bypass flow requirement in the past. This court ruled unambiguously in 2007 that it was inappropriate for the districts to base the size of their water rights claims on the conjecture that the Forest Service might impose a bypass flow. And there are good reasons that that's the policy of this state. If appropriators could base the size of their water rights on the conjecture that some future condition might necessitate larger water rights, they could conjure up any number of reasons that future conditions might necessitate larger water rights, and that rule would quickly result in an exhaustion of the remaining unappropriated water.
Would you agree, however, that the record supports a 25 CFS direct diversion based on what council said?
I don't believe the record supports a 25 CFS direct flow diversion, much less a 50 CFS direct flow diversion.
Why is that?
They haven't pointed to a single shred of evidence that suggests there's a need for 25 CFS. We take issue with...
Well, he said that Mr. Harris projected that that would be the need, basically. Let's assume it's in times of maximum seasonal water use of 25 CFS, unless I misunderstood what he said.
I believe, and I'm not exactly sure which piece of the record they're referring to, but my memory is that Mr. Harris found that there would be a peak flow, peak day demand, for a certain amount of diversion. You know, so on the highest, hottest day in July, when the most outdoor watering is going on, there would be a need for, maybe it's 25 CFS, I can't remember the number. But I believe that he based his direct flow demand projections on that peak flow, that peak demand day, rather than as a volumetric measure over the course of the year. And if you take the peak flow, peak demand day, and you multiply that out over the course of the year, of course, you see a higher demand. But demands fluctuate throughout the year, and a need for 25 CFS in July when outdoor watering is heavy doesn't justify 25 CFS direct flow diversion throughout the year.
Well, nevertheless, pumping facilities for direct flow are sized so that they could take the peak. If you build them less than, you know, diversion, yeah, take what's just less than 25 CFS, you can't take it at that period of time when you actually need it. Isn't that right?
That's right. And that's why there should have been a volumetric limitation on the amount of water that they could take under the direct flow demand or the direct flow water right. Thank you.
On behalf of the court, I want to thank both counsel for your arguments. The case will stand submitted, and the court will.